Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. I'm not going to ask you how you are, Kieran, because we've just been we've spent 40 minutes in each other's company. We've just recorded an interview with one of your students, who also happens to be the commercial advisor to Mary Earps, the sweary England goalkeeper that we all love. And we're both still smiling, Kieran, because it was a fantastic interview. And Tina Rehana, who seems to me a force of nature and a force of good, Kieran. So I urge all you listeners tomorrow to download that, because it was a really good interview. I imagine, though, Kieran, she takes a lot of teaching. She strikes me as a sort who'll ask you why a lot.
Yeah, and that's great. I mean, that's the whole point about teaching. It shouldn't be a one-way conversation. Otherwise, it's just like reading a book, a verbal book, isn't it? Tina's great to teach. I've got a job where I'm kicking against an open door, really, in terms of what I'm able to communicate.
And you were almost blushing, Kieran, when she ended the interview by telling us. I mean, obviously, I was delighted to find out that you were a very popular teacher. You know, I would have used the expression Mr. Chips, but I don't think Tina's of a generation that would have understood that reference. It's Newsday, Kieran. But our first news story is one of those that raises questions. So the first part of this pod, we'll combine our news and questions pod in both, I imagine. And it's, of course, the biggest story of the week, which is Nottingham Forest and their four-point deduction for breaching the Premier League financial rules. And I'll ask you the question that many people have asked, Kieran, and why 4 points?
Yes, I think that's a very good question, to which, having read the commission's report three times, I'm slightly the wiser, but not necessarily, Annie. What appears to be the case is that the commission has decided is that if a football club breaches the PSR limits, which in the case of Nottingham Forest is £61 million over 3 years, and we'll come back to that issue a little bit later, why is it so much lower than that of other clubs, then you should get a minimum of a three-point penalty. So it's 3 points for breaking the rules. And then they looked at Forest's position and they said, you didn't just break the rules. You know, we're not talking a tenner here or, you know, a monkey there or whatever. You overspent, in effect, by £34.5 million. And that's quite a substantial amount. So we're therefore going to give you a further three-point deduction on the back of that. And then they said, but we need to give you some credit. You realise that you'd overspent. You've been very proactive. You've cooperated as best you can in relation to assisting the Premier League. That's speeded up the process. That's reduced the costs of the commission, of the Premier League itself. And therefore, on the back of that, we're going to knock 2 points off your penalty. So we've effectively got a 3 plus a 3 minus a 2, which has given us this overall deduction of 4 points.
We'll talk about the comparison between them and Everton shortly, but is there any merit to the argument that at least the commission this time had some sort of benchmark given the Everton deduction, whereas before, when they were discussing Everton, there were no real guidelines as to what the points deduction should be in this sort of situation?
Well, I was looking for that. But if you then read through the Everton Commission report, it doesn't seem to say that there is a de minimis. And, you know, certainly Everton fans have raised this point. You know, Everton overspent by £19 million and have ended up with 6 points. Forest have overspent by £34 million and have ended up with 4 points. There is certainly some benefit in sort of having a next cab on the rank approach, because there has been a reference made to the Everton case by this commission, and I think that helped to speed up the process a wee bit. We are recording this on Wednesday, the 20th. I think it's our understanding that the next cab on the rank is Everton, who will be up before the commission next week, and therefore probably the back end of the following week. After that, we'll get another ruling. Then there's the potential for both clubs to appeal the verdict. So I think we're increasing the overall body of knowledge and precedent, but it's still very early days. I think it's fair to say that should one club get promoted from the Championship, and we won't name the club, we just call them Club L, then they might be subject to a commission if some of the stories doing the rounds are correct. And again, at least we should be moving to overall a more consistent, a smoother process. But in an ideal world, there shouldn't be any of these, of course.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to crack that code, wasn't it? Player B, who went from a club in Nottingham to a club in London. We're recording this on Wednesday morning, Kieran. And as far as I know, there's been no official response from Everton Football Club as yet, but there's been a massive response from Everton fans. How do you placate those Everton fans who say, despite Forest's breach being 77% larger, Everton's financial penalty was much bigger? And Nick DeMarco himself said that Everton's breach was far more serious than Nottingham Forest's. To us laymen and laywomen, lay people out here, Kieran, can you explain that?
In respect of Nick's comments, I think where he's coming from is that Everton is an established Premier League football club, and therefore it is competing against clubs that have been in the Premier League for decades, or in the case of our clubs, a substantial number of years. And therefore it's beholden upon Everton as a club to keep within those competitive parameters. Now, there's a separate issue: is are the rules fit for purpose? Because they are very much geared towards preserving the existing benefits that the elite of the Premier League already have. So, I think that formed the basis for those comments, and you can understand where he was coming from, and he's representing his client, and that's what you would say. And there's a logic in that from the defence point of view. As far as Everton having a higher tariff, it would have been the same. They would have both had 6 points, except Everton were not deemed to have cooperated with the initial commission to the same extent that we've seen from Nottingham Forest. There were one or two words in the first commission's report, where they made reference to the club. I think the word misleading was used on one occasion. Forest, they were not subject, I think, to the same level of disappointment from the commission with respect to certain of the elements. So that's why there is a difference. If I was an Everton fan, I'd be hopping mad, because I think you have to separate out the two issues. Are the rules appropriate? That's for another discussion. Have the rules been breached? Yes, they have. Have Nottingham Forest breached the rules to a greater extent than Everton? Yes, they have. So therefore, on the court of the Clapham Omnibus, it would appear that either Nottingham Forest penalty has been too low, or Everton's penalty has been too high, and that's how it is being interpreted, and you can understand that. Equally, talking to Forest fans, I've put out data that Forest were promoted with a club with a squad that cost £12 million. That won't buy you half a leg of a Premier League footballer, and yet it's the club's. Forest are expected to compete against clubs with billion-pound squads, how can you have a competitive Premier League? But that's again, it's a separate issue. Ultimately, they broke the rules.
Well, I was going to ask you about that argument, Kieran, because it's an argument that Forest used in their response to the four-point deduction. And I'll quote, it said, if we weren't allowed to do what we did, we would be at a disadvantage trying to stay up under budget restrictions no other club had faced. Now, Palace have stayed in the Premier League for 12 seasons under budget restrictions. We're not the only, we're not the only club to do that. There's plenty of clubs that have stayed in the Premier League under those. So I think a lot of us were baffled by that argument from Forest, saying it's impossible for us to stay up. Luton haven't spent that sort of money, and we'll come on to Luton's response later on. Luton haven't spent that sort of money, and they've got a fighting chance of staying up. So that argument to me seemed to be a slightly spurious one, I have to say, Kieran.
Yes. I mean, the commission made reference to the fact that Forest, I think they had a net transfer spend of around about £120 to £140 million, which is an awful lot. But then when you take a look at Fulham, I think in Fulham in 2019, they spent £120 million. I think Villa the first season, they were up. So we have seen significant spending. I think there is a separate issue in respect of Forest, in the sense that they did have some fairly unique circumstances when they were promoted. Three or four players were out of contract. Three or four players had been on loan with Forest, and therefore they went back to their host clubs. So they had to start from a much lower base than anybody else historically, and you can understand that argument. At the same time, there's some Forest fans who have been very honest to say, our transfer recruitment strategy was, the politest way you can describe it is scattergun, in that that there were players who were signed on contracts, and I've been told how much some of these contracts are worth for what you would say, ultimately, if you're a Premier League footballer, you've got a hell of a lot of talent. But you go, 100 grand a week, 120 grand a week for that player at that stage of their career. There was that issue. And then there was the opportunity to write off to cover all of those losses if player A, who we won't name, although there was reference to the player being sold to Tottenham Hotspur on the 1st of September for £47.5 million. But player A, let's call him Jennon Bronson as a pseudonym.
Well, I refer to him as player B, so that was a subconscious hint, wasn't it?
That's right. They had the opportunity to sell that player on the 30th of June. If that had taken place, they would have been within the limits. Now, they say there were mitigating circumstances. They ended up selling him for £47.5 million 2 months later.
That players out of contract argument, players on loan argument, the season before last ended with Palace having 11 players out of contract. And none of us blamed the Premier League for that. Hmm. It was poor management, poor long-term management by Palace. When we went into administration, none of us blamed the rules that put us into administration. We blamed Simon Jordan for being profligate with our money. So, the club has to face up to what it's done. Of course, you have a big question this week, Kieran, is everyone saying, what are the implications now for the second Everton charge and Man City, obviously, which I suspect will be asking that question in a decade's time. So what are the implications for both those clubs?
Well, I think if we start with Everton first, we know that, we believe that the hearing is going to be taking place next week. So we'll be looking to get a ruling in around about a fortnight's time. I think it's, again, talking to Evertonians, the consensus of opinion is the Premier League would not have charged us had we not been over the limit. So there is now also a universal acceptance is that if you go over the limit, you're going to have a points deduction. there is what appears to be now a belief that the minimum points reduction is 3 on the basis of what we've read from this commission. So let's assume that it is 3 million. You know, Everton sold Anthony Gordon, for example, last year for 40 million, academy player. That would help reduce their losses. Where do we go? Okay, here I'm going to give a best case scenario for Everton. They get a 3 points deduction. And we then say that you've already been punished for going over the limit in 2021 and 2022, and you're being assessed 2021, 2022, 23. So therefore, we're going to reduce the points deduction by 2/3. That takes us down to 1 point. If Everton have been proactive, if they have assisted the commission, then there is a case for saying that for good behaviour, we should give you a further 1 point reduction in the tariff. So yes, you've breached the rules, but based on these particular set of circumstances, the punishment is a 0 point deduction. And that might seem a bit strange, but looking at what we've seen in respect of Forest, there is a case for putting that forward.
In terms of the appeal or no appeal from Forest, it seems to me, Kieran, that they haven't got a lot of wriggle room, basically, in the basis of any appeal. They've already had 2 points taken off the deduction for good behaviour, for mitigating circumstances, for cooperating. They already got a much lower deduction than Everton did. So I'm finding it hard to see where their parameters would lie in the appeal, especially as we know that the commission possibly made some administrative errors in the Everton case anyway, which they didn't in the Forest. Okay, they clearly tidied those up. So it seems to me there isn't a lot of room for Forest to be able to appeal here.
Well, I think if we then take a look at the response from Nottingham Forest on the club website, I think the politest way of describing it is robust and unhappy. My understanding from the secret Forestian, or whatever we're going to call them, is that my understanding from Robin Hood is that they knew they'd breached the limits. 2 or 3 points, we'll take it on the chin. Anything above that, we're going to have to give serious thought with regards to an appeal. What is the downside of an appeal? There's twofold. First of all, it could be that the second commission say, well, we think the first commission was too lenient and we could increase it. I think that's very remote. And secondly, there's the cost issue. These things take time, and there are financial consequences. Having said that, the difference between being finishing 17th in the Premier League and being relegated is so huge financially. I don't think those cost issues are an issue. There's a third issue, which I think is far broader than that, is that if Forest choose to appeal, it could be that, again, if we take this sort of this cab rank approach to the way that things are being treated, that we could still be awaiting the results of appeals following the final whistle of the final matches of the season. And that would be terrible for football as the sport. Whether we like it or not, the final day of the season, often the relegation fight's just as exciting or even more exciting than who's going to win the Premier League. And it is box office, and you do see, the Sky cameras going into the crowds, and you've got people chewing their lips, and you've got people at the end of the match in tears. And as drama, as theatre, it is a fantastic product. What are you going to do now? Because we could be left in this crazy situation in which, Nottingham Forest finish 18th in the Premier League on the final day of the season. They've been relegated on goal difference from another club. And then 4 days later, they get 1 point added back on and those positions are swapped. You can understand the fury, the uncertainty, and also the disappointment. We never expected when we started this podcast, what, 4.5 years ago, A, for it to still be going, or B, for the breadth and the depth of the stories and the, not the dominance of finance, but the increased influence of finance and law on what is that, what is supposed to be a recreational sport.
And speaking of relegation, Kieran, I'm going to put on my Luton Town hat here, which is a very appropriate club. They've obviously got lots of hats available for me to put on. Leave aside Burnley and Sheffield United, because I think Burnley and Sheffield United are so many points behind. They haven't really got the same argument. But if Forest's points deduction of 4 points, if that was reduced to 2 on appeal, and then Luton were to go down 3 points behind Nottingham Forest, with my Luton Town hat on, I'm on the phone to Nick DeMarco straight away, demanding some kind of legal action. Because I'm on the phone to the Premier League, demanding to know why a club that has stayed resolutely within financial fair play limits has been relegated, and a club that hasn't, and I'm not going to use the word flouted, but a club that hasn't stayed within those financial fair play regulations has stayed up. As a Luton Town fan, that's not right.
Yes, yeah, and you know, fans of different persuasions and hats will look at this from a self-interest point of view, and that's perfectly understandable. Luton have spent modestly in their first season in the Premier League, and you could argue that you know they've come from an even further backstop in terms of where they were, because their revenues compared to Forest's were substantially lower. Even though both clubs were not in receipt of parachute payments, the level of losses underwritten by Gary Sweet and co at Luton, you know, they ran a very tight ship. They ran a well-run business by championship standards. Forest were very much at the limit. So if I was a Luton fan, of course I'd say that. And would they have any recompense? I personally think it would be remote, but you know, remote's not the same as nothing. And you explore all eventualities because, you know, it's going to happen to one set of people. If it's a choice between one of those two clubs going down, there's going to be job losses because you know we've seen I think Forest put in their accounts in 2022 that promotion costs are in the region of £20 million. Yes, some of those promotion costs are bonuses paid to staff, but it's upgrading facilities. It's the fact that you've got to take on additional members of staff in the commercial department, in the media department, and so on, because the demands of being one of those 20 clubs in the Premier League are huge. I've got the accounts of Aston Villa when they were relegated in, was it 2016? And it was about 400 employees, full and part-time, who lost their jobs as a result of relegation. It was the same with Sunderland. It won't necessarily be as many in the likes of Luton and Forest because they've not been in the Premier League for the same number of years as those two clubs. But it's of no consolation to those people that get that email, that get called into the office to say, well, you know, as a result of the commission doing X or Y, I'm very sorry to tell you, we can no longer afford to carry on employing it.
Yeah. Plus there's a knock-on effect on work in the community, on local businesses and all sorts of stuff.
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insights, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Thank you. moving on from a story involving Everton, Kieran, to a story involving Everton, Kieran. More legal shenanigans for 777 companies this week, but we understand, and I like saying that, we here at The Price of Football, we understand that the Premier League are set to make their decision on the Everton takeover this very week.
Yes, I think we are very much at the final stages here. It has taken substantially longer in terms of approving the takeover at Manchester United, and you know, Evertonians and fans of other clubs will be asking why. It's not a criticism of the Premier League here. I think people at the Premier League probably think we do give them a hard time, but they have done their job diligently. There has been a consistent and continual failure of 777 partners to provide sufficient information to the Premier League as to, first of all, where's your money coming from? And I think we're probably closer to the answer of that, although it looks as if some of the people who have been funding 777 themselves are thinking, we're not sure we want to fund this organisation any much longer. And B, what are your proposals in terms of meeting your budgetary responsibilities over the course of the next 2 years? 777 are a bit lax, to put it quite mildly, in terms of what they've been able to document and to prove. And we've seen that with the increasing number of lawsuits. You've only got to look at websites such as Josimar, who practically week by week are adding to the list of disgruntled partners, suppliers, lenders to 777 who end up having to go through a legal route. So I think everybody's reached the end of their tether. You have to wonder why Farhad Moshiri, A, approved 777 as partners, as prospective owners in the first place, and B, why he, as the custodian of the club, has been silent with regards to developments over recent months and has not made efforts to find somebody else as an alternative. Yeah, because we know that there are other people who are interested, but we can only presume that 777 have exclusivity at present.
I don't want to do the full Brian Moore, quickly Kevin, will he score here on you, Kieran, but your instinct is this time next week, will Everton be owned by 777?
They won't be owned by 777 there this time next week. I think it's unlikely that they will be approved as well to be owners in due course. That's my gut reaction, unless, it sounds very mealy mouth, unless the Premier League, in the light of what's happening on our next story in the regulator, want to give the regulator a hospital pass.
We often, or I often, wonder whether a story we're about to introduce is good news or bad news, because I've had my fingers burnt so often in the past, Kieran, when I go, here's a good news story, and you go, yes. But I think from our point of view, this next story is good news, and it is the fact that finally the Football Governance Bill has been introduced in Parliament. And I believe you and Tracy Crouch have been doing some high-fiving this week over the medium of the telephone, Kieran. You've stopped K-I-S-S-I-N-G in a tree, and now you're H-I-G-H-F-I-V-I-N-G on the phone.
Tracy and I, we've had a bit of communication, mainly along the lines of, she says, I believe you're two-timing me now with the new sports minister.
you tramp.
I'm very cheap. So the bill has now been placed. If you go onto the government website, you can download quite a few documents with regards to this. So let's look to see what is the regulator. First of all, its terms of reference, its remit has been set. And that remit is quite narrow. And it could be that there are some issues that fans or lobbying groups thought would be included, and some have expressed a bit of disappointment they haven't. But I personally think it's covering what it should be covering. So the first issue in respect of the regulator is what you might call under the umbrella of protecting the heritage of the game. So this means that if a club wants to change the colour of the shirt, the club crest, and these are pretty easy, you know, things to deal with, then it has to be given fan approval. So it's effectively you know, saying that the idea of the golden share, which we have spoken about in the past, can be given greater validity. Also, if the club wants to move its location, then again, it has to go and persuade the fan base that this is the case. And, you know, and we know in the case of Brentford, the Brentford board said, well, you know, Griffin Park, fantastic, but capacity, yeah, it was 11,000-12,000. We're moving to a bigger stadium. It's just round the corner. These are what we perceive to be the pluses from a commercial point of view, from a financial point of view, but also from a facilities point of view, you know, as far as you are concerned as fans. Because we both said, in respect, I remember it was like at Brighton at the Goldstone, you said similar with regards to Palace. It's a dump, but it's our dump, and we sort of tolerate it for that. But secretly, it's quite nice being able to sit in a seat where your knees aren't jammed in the ears of the person sitting in front of you. So, yeah, there can be advantages. Change is not necessarily improvement, but change can coincide with improvement. Certainly, it is in the case of the facilities, as far as my club are concerned, and those of Brentford. Also, in terms of what I would call under the umbrella of heritage, is that we've grown up with the concept of winning football matches allows you to go to the next step, whether that's promotion from one division to another, or in the case of European football, participation in Champions League, Europa Conference, and so on. What the regulator's remit will say is that it will be operating a licensing system. And in order to play in the top five tiers of English football, you have to satisfy the terms of the license. One of those terms is that if you choose to join a new competition, which is not deemed to be meritocratic, or I can't say the word, but is not based on, you know, the idea of winning matches to qualify for it, i.e. Super League Mark 1, then the regulator has the power to take away your licence. So it's not saying that you can't join the equivalent of a European Super League, but if it's going to be a European Super League, which is effectively a closed shop, then you're not going to be able to go and play in domestic football. So it's your choice, John Henry. It's your choice, the Glazers. You can play against Barcelona and Juventus and Real Madrid on a regular basis, guaranteed fixtures every year. But if you do, you're not going to be playing against, you know, Manchester City, Leeds, Chelsea, Liverpool, and so on, if those clubs choose to stay in the Premier League. So it's giving owners a choice. And I would imagine, I travelled up on Sunday afternoon from home to Liverpool, and I had to go via Manchester. We had that amazing FA Cup match between beating Liverpool is always going to mean a hell of a lot more than beating Real Madrid or Barcelona. And I'm not insulting non-Mancunians here, to what I would call Manc fans of Manchester United. And therefore, if the Glazers and Jim Ratcliffe make that decision, which they are entitled to do as owners of the football club, expect a backlash like no backlash you've ever known. So that's where we are in terms of the, I think there's three areas. The first one in heritage in terms of competition, stadium and so on. The second issue is in respect of owners. And it looks as if the regulator wants to have their own version of the owners and directors test. The advantage that it will have over the Premier League is that as a government body, it will be able to use the resources of government to investigate the background of people who want to come into the game. It will be focusing on the source of funds. Again, it can go that much further. And it will be saying to all prospective owners of clubs is that if you want to keep your license, then you've got to show us a business plan each year. And if you fail to do so, well there's a range of sanctions, of which the ultimate sanction is that you lose your license. So again, we're trying to nudge people in the right direction. I think the regulator, you know, and we have to acknowledge this is a Conservative Party, who is the present government, you know, which is traditionally, you know, anti-regulation, pro-business, how it would describe itself. It does not want to dissuade investors from coming into the game. And I think actually that's to be applauded. You know, part of the reason for the success of the Premier League is that we have had such a broad range of owners come into football. And financially, clubs have often benefited, even though sometimes on a non-financial basis, there have been less savoury elements to some of those acquisitions. So that's where we are in terms of the owners. The Premier League has pushed back on this with the claim that these rules would create unforeseen consequences.
How do they know?
Well, exactly, yeah. And the thing is, as far as I'm aware, every decision I have made in life has unforeseen consequences. Yeah, if I decide to go to a Killing Joke concert one evening, that does have implications because I could have gone to another concert and I could have met somebody who could transform my life. So, yeah, the argument of unforeseen consequences is effectively the Premier League saying, look, we don't want anybody regulating us, and that's understandable. Yeah. I'm very blessed in terms of what I teach. Nobody at university actually really understands what I teach, but they don't regulate what I can and cannot cover in individual lectures. And that's absolutely fantastic for me. You know, if I had to go and follow a very, very set program in terms of what you do, that would be less fun. It will be the same for you as somebody that works in the entertainment industry, that you don't get go to a venue and say, well, you can only tell jokes about these four subjects and you can't tell jokes about these 27 subjects. You can't, well, yeah, you're restricting my ability to be an artist or in my case, a teacher, or in the case of the Premier League, in its ability to regulate itself. So you can understand the Premier League pushing back on that, but it's a fairly weak argument because from what I can see, most clubs, they'll have to submit a couple of extra forms a year. But if you're a well-run football club, this will have zero consequences for you because you're already a well-run club. You already have no intention of moving your club to the Isle of Man to play your home fixtures because you've got tax benefits from doing so or whatever. So that's where we are. And then the third issue is one of finance. And this is the real reason why the Premier League's pushing back. The regulator will have what we refer to as backstop powers. And what do backstop powers mean? It means if you continue to fanny around at Premier League chief executive meetings and fail to come up with an offer, which you can then put to the EFL on which they can vote, we will take over that responsibility and we will decide what we consider to be a fair distribution model. Again, people don't like being told what to do, especially people who are billionaires or sovereign wealth funds. You know, billionaires tend to tell other people what to do. So they don't like being on the receiving end of that. Is it meaning that something will be set in stone? No. You know, if you read the small print, that any deal effectively signed off by the regulator would have a shelf life of 5 years and then effectively say to the Premier League and the EFL, yeah, come. Get back into a room, come up with another deal, and we move on. So that's where we are. The response from what I can only describe as some of the usual suspects in the Premier League has been negative. You've got David Sullivan making references to the water industry, making reference to the Ofgem and so on. And I'm going, those bodies are flawed. But we've also got an independent Bank of England, which is effectively regulator of finance. having an independent Bank of England has been a benefit for the UK economy. And then he's going on to say, well, yeah, what about the costs of running the regulator? And that's a valid point. Having again gone through the small print, the budget for the regulator is £10 million a year. To put that into context, David Sullivan and David Gold earned £23 million in interest from loans that they made to West Ham United. The 20 highest paid directors in the Premier League, they earned £58 million in 2022 compared to the £10 million for running the regulator. And then if you got, well, you know, government incompetence, David, okay, if you think that government incompetence shouldn't go through, here's a suggestion. Why don't you go and rip up that rental contract you have with L20 with regards to the London Stadium, because you are being subsidised by every citizen in London on the back of that. How is that £10 million going to be funded? It's the vast majority of that will be coming from the Premier League. I think the view that those with the broadest shoulders bear the biggest costs. So I think well over 8 million of that will be borne by the Premier League. And then within the Premier League itself, you're then going to have a squabble. Should it be split evenly? Should it be split on a merit basis? And we're back to square one in terms of the arguments in the boardroom.
I don't want to go into too much detail now, Kieran, because we'll do that as time progresses. But there are three things. First of all, you know, the unforeseen consequences. If you were to go to that Killing Joke concert on the night of the Baroness's birthday, for example, the consequences would be foreseen. I mean, very much, yes, foreseen. Secondly, the licence thing I find very interesting. We'll be talking about Reading in a moment, but it strikes me that this idea of a licence that can be taken away would have resolved or at least focused Dai Yong's attention a lot earlier than it has been at the moment. And thirdly, Kieran, the timescale, does the bill mention how long it will take before this has become an Act of Parliament and it is the regulator is in his office?
Right. With regards to the second point and the withdrawal of the licence, what does this mean? Well, some people have said that means that, assuming that the club is put into special measures, then effectively we could have a situation of clubs being quasi-nationalised for a short period of time. Where does this stand with regards to FIFA's rules that, you know, government, central government cannot be involved? I think the way that the legislation will have been worded is they will have consulted FIFA, they will have taken legal advice, and they'll be fine. Do we want football clubs to be nationalised? No, we don't. You know, they are local in nature. But what this would allow is for a faster solution to be found to finding a new owner. Because, you know, part of the reason why some clubs are still in the hands of people that you won't necessarily want them to be in is because they don't like being told what to do. They are stubborn. They've got an inflated sense of the worth or the value of the club. Whereas perhaps somebody with a more commercial perspective might take a different view. Again, will this put off owners or prospective owners? It will put off tire kickers. It will put off those people that are trying to make a quick buck. So, yes, it will put off some people from thinking about going into football. It will put off the undesirables. I don't see that as being a negative issue. With regards to the passage of legislation, we've seen already the government, the Conservative Party, putting out tweets to say, you know, we will stop Super League taking it. So we have cross-party support for this. I don't think it's going to be a winner for one party or another, because there's nothing to be gained from opposing it, I'll be honest, from a political point of view. So therefore, that should speed its way through Parliament. It's subject to three readings. It would then be subject to approval and you know, any comeback from the House of Lords. We are going to have a general election at some point this year. Again, reading the small print, there is the ability within Parliament for things to be accelerated. So assuming that we're not going to have a May general election, which does now appear to be increasingly remote, I don't see why this should not be legislation by the time that Parliament finishes sitting, as far as the this side of the election. We already have a chief operating officer appointed in respect of the shadow regulator, and I believe that steps are being undertaken to recruit a chief executive and so on.
Well, talking of unpopular owners, Kieran, brings us nicely to Blackburn Rovers. The fans have been understandably volatile there in the last few weeks, and the owners have now responded to that.
Yes. Just a bit of background on this story for people not familiar with it. Blackburn Rovers have been owned by the Venky family since 2010, 2011. They have been generous owners in the sense that they've underwritten losses of around about £200 million during that period of time. But last year, the Indian government, and the Venkies are from India, the Indian government had some reservations with regards to how the Venkies had been using money outside of India. In particular, with regards to, I think under Indian law, if you are investing in other industries, that's fine. I think there was a feeling that the Venkies had used some of the money to buy property, which falls without outside rules. I think one of those properties may have been Gary Neville's former house.
So
that's where we were. And I think the fear was that because of this degree of scrutiny, the Venkies would not be able to provide the level of financial support to Blackburn that historically been the case. And it did seem to be very quiet. You know, I monitor Venkies London at Companies House, and it normally, it's come no surprise to you, does it? I can see from that look in your face, that patient, oh Christ, not another one. And there hadn't been very much activity recently, but a couple of days ago, on Monday, there was a statement put out by Blackburn Rovers on the website to say that the Venkies are still committed to the club. They are still intending to have a long-term relation with the club. And then, lo and behold, within 24 hours, up pops a new document at Companies House to say that they've put in another £11 million in the form of fresh shares. It's a strange relationship between the owners and the fan base. I think the Venkies haven't attended a match for over a decade because I believe that a fan once threw a snowball at one of the directors and they took umbrage to this. But when it comes to providing hard cash, they have continued to do this. And for those Blackburn fans to say, well, the money's not been well spent, that's a separate issue. I don't think the Venkies themselves would say that they have the expertise or knowledge to recruit great players. It's just that they delegate that responsibility to others.
I almost want to say fair play to them because they keep shoveling the money in, don't they, despite their unpopularity. But so they now own Gary Neville's eco Teletubby house, do they? The one
it's something connected to a Gary Neville property. Yes. Ooh, okay. I think it was quite an expensive one as well. That one, don't exactly see how Gary, he might be Red Nev, but he's not a two up two down type of guy, is he?
He might claim he's from a two up, two down type of background, Kieran, but I know he's not that. And why would he be? He's a millionaire, Kieran. It'd be willfully stubborn of him to carry on living in a two up, two down when he's got that sort of money. We are already nearly an hour in, Kieran, so I think we need to perhaps not give these remaining stories as much detail as we have done for the earlier stories, which is rightly so because they're big stories. But confirmation of news that we're expecting from Torquay United.
Yes, and I think this is really sad. The National League have said that Torquay United's announcement that they are planning to appoint an administrator is an insolvency event, that has triggered an automatic 10-point deduction. And we've now got the worst of both worlds for Torquay. A, they've just lost 10 points and they are closer to the league trapdoor than they would like to be. But B, they've not yet appointed an administrator. And why that's the case, one can only assume, is that they've either approached some administrators, and the first thing that the administrator will say is, okay, who's going to fund? Who's going to be paying my wages during the administration? Perhaps they've not had a positive answer to that. But it also means that given that this is now, you know, public knowledge, if I'm a supplier to Torquay United Football Club Limited, I'm not going to supply any goods or services, because when the appointment takes place, that's when the portcullis comes down. And any money which is owed at that point in time is effectively frozen. And then you might get some, or you might not get some, depending upon the success of the course of the administration. So what we're going to see is, you know, who's going to send pies to Torquay United when they've got the next home fixture, unless the club agrees to pay cash on delivery. So it's not good at all.
Is there precedent for this, Kieran? I have to say, I assumed that the club had gone into administration, which is why I said it was sad news. So is there precedent that a league can decide that an insolvency event is looming, so therefore we'll do the points deduction? Because it seems to me that puts the club in a terrible situation. It makes it harder to attract new buyers as well, surely, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I think it could potentially be reversed. If they manage to find a new buyer and not go into administration,
right,
then they could apply to the National League to say, well, the insolvency event has not taken place. Now, I think under the National League's rules, an announcement of a proposal to go into administration triggers the penalty, just as going into administration does. And these things do get very, very complicated. I believe Ted Baker have gone into administration today, and hundreds of jobs being lost. But at least there was that very short window of, between announcement and, appointment. Why the club owner has not made progress with regards to this is baffling. It's the only way I can describe it.
Mm. Two interesting stories coming out of Manchester United, Kieran. The first one involving HMRC.
Yeah, I'm not sure why this one has got traction. If we take a look at the second quarterly results from Manchester United, it says in the small print that Manchester United is in discussion with HMRC with regards to unspecified tax issues. Now, my understanding, this will be in relation to amounts paid to image rights companies, possibly amounts paid to third parties with regard to the recruitment of players, and there could be tax consequences of this. But I've got hold of Manchester United's accounts for the last few years, and this particular note has always been in there. And I've also been through the accounts of some other clubs. Exactly the same reference is made in the Newcastle United accounts. There has been historic tax issues. We've always had this discussion that the HMRC's football department doubled its number of inspectors, and maybe go, oh, double number of inspectors, but doubling it from one to two. And he or she's entitled to their holidays and to go on training days and so on. So it is very much a slow process, but somebody's picked this up and it's been run in the newspapers. It's no change from where we were 3 or 4 years ago in respect to Manchester United.
Right. Well, is this more of a story then, Kieran? Their Adidas deal and the Champions League?
For me, it's old news.
Oh, okay.
But, I think we might be responsible for the growth of nerds in terms of reading football accounts from cover to cover. I thought it was just me and Swiss Ramble that used to do it. But in the case of Manchester United, under the present deal that they have with Adidas, which is a £750 million 10-year deal, if Manchester United failed to qualify for the Champions League in two consecutive seasons, then there can be a 25% reduction in what Adidas pay. That contract has been renewed from 2025 onwards, and it's now a £900 million 10-year contract starting in 2025. But the penalty is lower. The penalty is no longer 25%. It's gone to £10 million. But this is if you don't qualify for the Champions League for 1 year. So, yes, it's been a change of terms and conditions, but that was in their accounts 3 months ago and 6 months ago as well.
Okay, well, just down the road, Kieran, a club we do talk about a lot because we're very friendly with them. It's a difficult time for Andy Holt and Accrington Stanley at the moment, not helped by the fact they've lost a considerable amount of money.
Yes, so in 22-23, Stanley lost £785,000. Andy, as we know, is someone that lives, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve, and it has been, there's been issues recently with regards to the managers have been sacked, assistant managers have been sacked, they're in League Two, and from reading some of Andy's announcements on social media, they're due to lose a substantial amount of money in 23-24 as well. We interviewed Andy about 6 months ago, and I'd never seen him as down as I had then. Yeah, we are in regular contact. He's up for the fight again, but I think it just shows the struggle. Even if you've got one of the lowest wage budgets in English football, which Stanley do have, you're still struggling to break in.
Mm. Our penultimate story, Kieran. Remember that discussion we had earlier about me not being entirely sure whether a story was good news or bad news until I saw your eyebrows? This story surely is good news, is it not, for Reading fans?
Yes. It now appears that they have made more progress than they have historically with regards to the ending of the reign of Dai Yonga. So there is an American investment group. And again, I think we've said on a couple of occasions, you know, if we were selling Reading, I'd be pitching it as a London club. Yeah, ish. It's close to Heathrow. It's got good rail links. It's got its own stadium. I think it would be quite appealing to American investors in terms of they want to come across, especially from the East Coast. To see them on a regular basis. So it looks as if the intransigence of Dai Yonga has been overcome. We are closer to finding a bidder. And in addition to the issues with regards to the club and the stadium, the prospective sale of the training facilities to Wycombe Wanderers has been put on hold because Wycombe Wanderers have put out a statement on their website. I think they were quite surprised at the level of hostility from Reading fans. And reading the press release on the Wycombe Wanderers page, it was going to be, look, we were still going to allow Reading to train there. So we were not going to kick them out. We were also willing to pay the outstanding HMRC bills and the outstanding wages as part of the overall agreement to buy Bearwood Park. But it looks as now that they're having second thoughts with regards to that, which could, you know, paradoxically act in favour of a prospective new owner who could buy Reading Football Club, the stadium, and the stadium is owned by a different company to the football club, and the training facilities as well. So, you know, I've always taken the view as a whole package, Reading is very attractive. It's less attractive without the training facilities.
And finally, Kieran, we all have someone. Everybody listening to this pod will have someone who's not a mate. He's not even an acquaintance. He's somebody you know, you see from time to time, you nod at, who seems to get away with murder to the extent that you almost secretly admire them. And you'll say to your mate, cheeky twat. He's got, I give you FIFA president Gianni Infantino.
Yes, FIFA have published their financial report, and our very good friend Gianni he's the person that said that women's football really needs to pay for itself, and they will increase the prize money in due course, but it's down to the women's game to action that. With his progressive views like this, he's just been given a 33% pay rise.
Cheeky twat.
By fee. So, yeah, that's $4.67 million. Wow. Yeah, it includes a bonus, but I'm not quite sure what the bonus was. What did FIFA achieve in 2023? I think the only thing I seem to remember them doing was reappointing Gianni Infantino for another 5 years as El Head Honcho. So, yeah, $4.67 million. He's living in Qatar, where the rate of tax is very, very low. So his netto will be quite high as well. I'm sure he's got quite a deal, good deal on his two up, two down there.
Well, do you know what? If I was deciding his pay, I'd just look at his eyes. I'd say, look at the twinkle in his eyes. He deserves. Give that man 33% pay rise and let him be president for as long as he wants. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page, including Toby Henry, Gabriella Lowe, Victoria Kearns, Mike Clark, David Williams, Michael Littleton, Morgan Nock, Tom, Alan Lingard, Matt Smith, Andy Brown, Stuart Gale, Paul T, Nicholas Morgan, Tim Onions, Jack Hoyle, Kieran Kane, and Pete. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod and get access to our chat community and our regular quizzes, that'd be very kind of you. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And you can go to the same website to get our latest book or a Price of Football t-shirt. We'll be back with our questions pod on Monday. Although don't forget, we have a really interesting interview pod for you tomorrow. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, thank you as always for engaging with us through so many means, keeping us on our toes. It does make a difference. It helps us to identify the areas which you're interested in as well. And also, it reminds us that football is from the top tier to the very bottom, because we get questions from all levels of football. There's other ways you can support the show. You know, Patreon, if you want an ad-free version, is one option. There's other ways you can support the show. And you give us a review using your app, and it doesn't matter what you say on that review. You could even say you'd want it presented by the two most potty-mouthed women on the planet, Tracy Crouch and Mary Earps.
Oh, that'd be good. You'd turn up for that one, Kieran. You'd be there. You'd be doing the techie stuff for that, wouldn't you?
Yes.
That'd be. We can make that happen, Kieran.
We can.
We could make that. That's one of the first ones we can actually make happen. That's fantastic. Let's do that. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football.
Picture this, the roar of a crowd, the tension building, the electrifying moment your team scores the winning goal. Pure joy, right? But for many football fans, barriers can shut them out of that experience. In the UK, nearly 1 in 4 people, that's 16 million, have a disability. And over 70% of those disabilities are non-visible.
There's a really broad range of non-visible disabilities out there. So it can be hearing loss, it can be sight loss, it can be neurodiversity, it can be any manner of things that people can't perceive.
People look, why are they parking in a blue badge space? They can walk. Why are they using an accessible toilet? They're walking in. But that's not the point. You can't see the invisibleness of the disability. But then if somebody's judging you, you can tell they haven't got the awareness. They haven't got the understanding.
I've always lived my life as a sighted person who can't see, to the point where then if I didn't have my long cane, chances are a lot of people wouldn't know. Me having it isn't always just for me, but it is actually for other people as well.
Find out how you can contribute to a more inclusive matchday experience for everyone by supporting Level Playing Field, the national charity advocating for greater access and inclusion for all disabled sports fans through its Unite for Access campaign. Unite for your team, unite as a fan. Let's unite for access.